We are very grateful. It's in your name we pray. Amen. All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, like I said, welcome. Glad you guys are here. We are starting a brand new series tonight, and it is really about the idea of self-awareness. The name of the series is Know Thyself. I realized some time ago that this was an important value for me. About a year ago, my family was going through one of those transitional moments. I've heard it said that about every 2 years, parents have to completely change the way that they parent because kids have completely changed who they are. About every day, and I am watching, I was about to ask, say that I don't know if this is true for every parent in the world, but I'm seeing a lot of nodding. And I will say that for myself, with an 8 and 10-year-old, this has proven to be quite accurate. Almost as soon as I feel like we get in a good rhythm, I feel like we have to change some pretty drastic things up because my kids are new kids. A 10 and an 8-year-old are not the same as a 6 and an 8-year-old were, or a 2 and a 4-year-old for that matter. And one of this particular moment, this particular week, it was the approximately 17th container of cleaning solution that my son had found in the bathroom and decided to experiment with. And so there was, I walked into the bathroom and there was like foamy cleaning solution all over everything. And I don't mean like that sort of figurative everything where you just mean there was a little dollop of it somewhere. I mean, there was cleaning foam everywhere, and it was rather late at night, and I was not a happy camper. The next day, I was with my daughter, and my daughter used what was at the time one of her all-time favorite words. I don't know if any of you ever use this word, but the word is I would just. I would just. It used something like this. I know I was supposed to do that, but I was just cleaning my room. I was just sharing. That came when she slapped a no whining sticker on my son. I was just sharing. Yes, that's what you were doing. You were sharing. And it was the 247th I would just in recent memory. And between those things, I thought to myself, and I was not happy with the fact that I was having to deal with the exact same thing over and over and over and over and over and over and over again. I understand that this is what parenting is all about. I affirm the fact that it is children's responsibility to test boundaries and discover the fact that parents are capable of holding solid and steady boundaries. That's our job. It is still difficult to do sometimes. This was that particular week. And in the middle of all of this, one of the things I believe really, really strongly is that the person with the most authority needs to reflect on whether or not they are doing what they're supposed to do first, right? So if my kids are not doing their part of sort of the family agreement, my first question is, okay, what am I doing? Am I creating the culture in my family in which they can succeed, in which it is clear what success means, in which we all agree on what we're trying to accomplish as a family? And I reflected over the last couple of months in our family's lives, and I thought, you know what? I'm not sure my kids would know exactly what it means to succeed, to get a win. So I thought to myself, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to ask all the people in my family, it's myself, my wife, and my kids, what we each think the highest values that our family holds are. Not what I think they should be, not what one of my kids thinks they should be, but just what do you think? I just asked my kids one day, we were driving the next day to school or someplace, and I said, hey kids, if you were to tell me, based on my behavior and the way I'm training and teaching you, what our family's highest values are, what would you say? And not surprisingly, they said things like being on time, getting things done quickly. I really value time and speed. This is true. And so they said a number of things that I think accurately reflected what I was doing, but didn't accurately reflect what I was trying to do. Do you know what I mean? Sometimes what you're actually doing isn't the same as what you're actually trying to do. Particularly for me in parenting, I feel like this is the case. So I sat down with the kids again the next day, and I said, what do you think we mean to be communicating our values are? And they listed out 10 or 12 different things. And then I went to my wife and I said, Kristen, what do you think? And then I started brainstorming and I mashed them all together. And amongst all of these, I found five basic things that our family believes are incredibly important. And from that, I developed this particular document right here. I realized that my family cares in its best moments. What we want to care about is not timeliness, it's not speed, it is prayer, excellence, truth, respect, and awareness. So I printed a copy of this in pink, and I framed it, and I put it in my daughter's room. And I printed a copy in blue or orange or something, and I framed it, and I put it in my son's room. And I printed a copy in green, and I put it in the upstairs hallway. And I printed a copy in purple, and I put it in our kitchen. So now, everywhere you go in my house, you see that. It's everywhere. You can't miss it. Those are the things we value. Why do I have it everywhere? Because I want it to be a conversation piece. So every once in a while, when the kids go to bed, I'll say to them, so look at our five values as a family and tell me, what's one thing you really feel like you're winning on? What's one thing you feel like you could improve tomorrow? How would you do that? And we'll have this conversation. I actually apparently ask this too often, because last week when I asked this, my daughter Hannah said, Dad, I wish you would stop asking that at bedtime and just give me a hug goodnight. And I said, what do you mean? And she said, well, the questions have gotten longer and longer, and Dad, the hugs have gotten shorter and shorter. And I said, oh, that's not okay. I said, I tell you what, I'm going to keep asking, but I'll make sure it doesn't cut into the hugs, okay? And that was not good enough for her, but that's still what we're going to do. But one of the things that is fascinating to me about this document is that all of us agreed on that last one. By the way, I am not here to tell you that your family should operate off of these values. That is not the point tonight. It's the opening illustration. So you should figure that out with your family. But what I did find interesting was that the last one of these is not one that would make it necessarily onto everybody's list. Respect probably would make it onto most family values lists, right? Like, sure, of course. Truth. Anybody surprised to see truth up there? No, right? Like, of course it's up there. But I didn't feel like when we made this, and I still don't feel like, for most folks, the idea of awareness was a central theme. And really, the primary thing we mean by this is, really, there's two things, but for tonight's purposes, one of those two primary things is self-awareness. You need to know to my son, I often say, you need to know what your body is doing right now. Because he doesn't always know. Like, his hands will be doing something. I'm like, what are you doing right now? Oh, okay. And he'll stop doing it, but he had no idea. Right? We need to practice being aware of what's going on with our bodies. But we also need to be practicing being aware of what's going on with our mouths as a family. And certainly my wife and I, as well as our kids, we all need to practice this. We need to be aware of what's going on in our hearts. Have you ever been frustrated about this situation over here? You walk into a conversation and your frustration leaks and you think to yourself, if you're doing well, huh, my aggravation had nothing to do with the situation I'm actually in. The worst question is, how many times has that happened to you and you didn't notice? Isn't that a scary question? But we all know it's true. Awareness was a huge part of what we think it takes to be a healthy, whole, and godly family. I find that interesting because as I was preparing this year, and we brainstormed I got all the small group leaders together and I asked them to brainstorm about the most important topics we needed to talk about for the entire year. This one came up in a whole bunch of different ways. We all believe as people who lead, as people who actively lead in the area of discipleship and spiritual growth, we all believe that knowing yourself is a really essential part of growing closer to Jesus. I find that fascinating. And so what we're going to be doing over the next 4 weeks, we are going to be talking about the idea of self-awareness, about actually paying attention to what is going on in our own hearts, actually paying attention to what's going on in our own minds, actually paying attention to what's going on in our own bodies, actually paying attention to what's going on in our own souls. And I realize I think that I need to explain a little bit about why I think this is important. So I want to take a couple minutes before we even jump into tonight's topic of being aware of our own hearts. I want to talk about why I think this idea of self-awareness is so important. And so first of all, from a practical level, there's a couple reasons, at least two, that I can think of why self-awareness is incredibly important if we want to grow together. And if what it means to come on Wednesday night, the reason you show up is that you want to move your spiritual life forward. You want to grow. This is explicitly the moment in the week that you show up if you want to move forward in your spiritual journey. Why is self-awareness so important for that? Well, first of all, I think it's important because there are two primary people involved in your spiritual growth. You and God. There are other people who play secondary roles, but those two people play the only two primary roles in your spiritual journey. And the one thing I have come to be convinced of is that God is never the limiting factor. Seems really obvious, but when was the last time you actually sat down and thought about it? You know what that means? You are. Right? I am. So if I am ever not moving forward in my spiritual journey the way I want to, if I am ever aware that progress is not happening, if there's ever some sort of barrier in the way, it has never in anyone's experience, in all the history of the entire world, it has never been God saying, I've decided I don't want you to grow. That never happens, which means a large percentage of spiritual growth is taking an honest stock of what's going on in my life and admitting, what is the blockage in me? What's the barrier in me? What is stopping me from growing? So, self-awareness is incredibly important because the barriers to growth exist right here, in me, nowhere else. The second reason I think self-awareness is incredibly important and relates to growth is that growth, even if there are no barriers, growth requires a baseline. If you are going to move forward, you need to know where you're starting. Does that make sense? So, for example, a very, very simple illustration. Just a couple of months ago, I decided I wanted to be able to do 100 push-ups in one shot. That is a goal that I have right now. I have no idea if I'm going to successfully go for it, but for me to accomplish that goal, I think that I need two things. First of all, I need a plan for getting there. So I downloaded an app, creatively enough called 100 Push-Ups. And it tells me how many to do every day in order to get there. But you know what it asked me at the beginning? It asked me how many I can do right now. I'm going to let you live with the tension of not knowing for a moment here. But you know, there is no way I can make progress in this area if I don't know what my baseline is. Which, by the way, impressively or not, it was 17. That was my limit. So I am on a journey. Thank you. I actually didn't know that that was clapworthy. I have never talked to anybody about push-ups in my entire life before. So except for my 10-year-old son, who also could do approximately 17 when we both tried that first day. And so I have no idea. But so I had to know where I was starting, and I had to have a plan. We talk all the time on Wednesday nights, if you've never joined us, we talk all the time about making a plan to get where you're going. As a matter of fact, we talked for a whole series back in February, I think it was, about the idea of vision, making sure you know where you're going so that you can have a plan to get there. But having a plan to get somewhere only works if you know where you're starting from. If you don't know where you're starting from, your plan won't be very helpful. If I started off doing push-ups, and I was like, all right, the first couple of weeks, I'm just going to do 10 every day to increase my push-ups ability. Would that have helped? No, of course not. I could already do 17. That would not help at all. I have to know where I'm starting from. That is another way that self-awareness is incredibly important. The Bible on this, I looked this up in the Bible. I found somewhere in the vicinity of like 76 verses about the fact that we need to know ourselves in the Bible. Like, this is all over the place. I don't have time to read you 76 different verses, so I'm just going to read you three really, really quickly. You can jot them down if you want to go look them up. I would challenge you to always look up every verse that you ever hear somebody quote. That way you know they quote it correctly. Here are a couple. 1 Timothy 4:16 says this, "Keep a close watch on yourself and on the teaching." That was that thing I just mentioned about looking it up. "Persist in this, for by doing so you will save both yourself and your hearers." How do you save yourself? Keep a close watch on yourself. You've got to be self-aware. Romans 12:3 said this, "Don't think you are better than you really are. Be honest in your evaluation of yourselves, measuring yourselves by the faith God has given us." There it is, self-awareness. Galatians 6:3 says, "For if anyone thinks he is something, when he is nothing, he deceives himself." We've all known people like that. Most of them lived in the mirror. And so we're going to take the next couple. Thank you, whoever got that joke. I heard one laugh. And everybody else was like, yeah, they really are, and totally missed the point. We're going to take the next couple of weeks to examine within ourselves, first of all, what's going on in ourselves, and second, to figure out some habits and practices that we can develop over time that will let us be more self-aware than we currently are. So that's kind of the map that we're going to take over the next couple of weeks. During that time, we're going to break it up for simplicity's sake. We're going to break ourselves up. Everybody aware that that just happened? Were you aware? Awareness is important. All right. That's me, entirely me, guys, and I know that in the back that's not you, but something is broken on the microphone, and so if it keeps doing that, I'll have to switch to the handheld. So we're going to break up this series, just for simplicity's sake, into four things. Know your heart, know your mind, know your strength, and know your soul. It's kind of the direction we're going over the next 4 weeks. Tonight we're going to talk about knowing your own heart. Next week we'll talk about knowing your mind. The next week after that we'll talk about knowing your strength. And the final week we'll talk about knowing your soul. And we'll use that one to tie it together, because soul is really the essential element in this series that will help you not just know what's going on in the rest of you, but moderate or control what is going on in the rest of you. So that's kind of where we're going. But for tonight, we are going to focus in on this idea of heart. When you think of heart, probably the first thing that comes to mind is your feelings. How do I feel today? Do I feel happy or sad, angry or confused, whatever, lonely? But I want you to know that there is a lot more to your heart than just your feelings. There's also a lot more, before we even get there though, there's also a lot more to your feelings than just your feelings. Here's what I mean by that. I think we have two kinds of feelings, and I'm stealing this from an old theologian named Jonathan Edwards, who was one of the smartest men that ever lived in America, and he was an amazing dude. But anyway, he said, and I think this is a great idea that we need to hold on to as people, he said we have two types of feelings. One kind of feeling is the immediate reaction we have in the moment. But underlying that, sometimes consistent with it, sometimes going in the exact opposite direction, we have more long-term feelings. And those long-term feelings are far more accurate to the real us. Let me give you an example of this. I mentioned my son's 17th time emptying a bottle of cleaner in the bathroom. In that moment, I was super aggravated. There is no question, I'm not going to pretend and be very spiritual. I was super aggravated. So if I were to be asked, how do I feel towards my son in that moment? My response would be, right? That is how I feel. Does that accurately capture the big picture of how I feel towards my son? No, not at all. Underneath that momentary feeling are deeper and more underlying feelings that are truer about me and that are more long-term, right? So underlying that, I feel great affection for my son. Whether I feel affection for my son. By the way, notice I'm not using the word love in here. Love is a far more nuanced idea than it could possibly be used in this category of feelings, either short-term or long-term. I just don't think it's the right category for that. But we might get there at some other point. If you're curious what I mean, we did a whole series on love just a couple weeks ago. Go look it up. But I have this strong emotional affection for my son, underlying whether I'm aggravated or not, joyous or not. And if I wanted somebody to evaluate who I really am in my feelings, I want them to evaluate me based on the long-term feelings, not the momentary feelings. Anybody else with me on that? The momentary feelings aren't the real ones. They're just reactive. And I think that we need to intentionally evaluate ourselves based on those long-term feelings, rather than, isn't it easy to judge yourself or judge others based on momentary reactions? But they're so often not quite accurate. So anyway, there's more to our feelings than just our feelings. But there is more to our heart even than feelings properly understood. Far more to the heart than just feelings. So what is the heart all about? The heart, I think, is the part of us that recognizes and anticipates patterns. The heart is the part of us that recognizes and anticipates patterns. It's the part of us that interprets the future based on the past. So here's what I mean by that. If you have had, over the course of your life, 100 arguments, each of which made you feel completely powerless. So at 2, you had your first argument and you felt powerless, and at 3, you had 16 of them, and you know, then we were 4, you had a bunch of those, and 5, you had some, and 6, you had them, and 8, you had them, and 10, you had them. When anything that looks like an argument starts coming up in your life, how are you going to feel? Powerless. Why are you going to feel powerless? Is it because something in the current situation actually means you should feel powerless? No. Because your feelings don't react to the immediate situation. They react to the patterns that they have developed an understanding of from past events. Feelings are a way of fitting the present into the patterns that you have interpreted out of the past. Does that make sense? Which is a powerfully important thing, by the way. This is not good or bad. Let's make sure we're very clear about that. If you see me tomorrow and I kick you in the shins, and then I say I'm sorry, and the next day when you see me, I kick you in the shins, and then I say I'm sorry, and I do this every day for like 3 months, if you still walk by me, you are dumb, right? Because your pattern recognition software in your head should tell you, there's Pastor Joshua. He's going to kick me in the shins. And what? How does your pattern recognition software do that? You see me and you feel a little anxiety. Or you see me and you feel a little fear. Or you see me and you feel a little confusion. Those feelings are indicators that a pattern recognition is running. You have some sort of mental model of what is about to happen based on what has happened. These can also be good, by the way. If someone takes a wise financial risk one time and it pays off, and then they take another wise financial risk and it pays off, and then they take another wise financial risk and it pays off, do this 25 times, you know what they're going to want to do the next time? Take another wise financial risk. Of course they are. Why? Because it paid off 25 different times. Pattern recognition. And what are they going to feel? Excitement. Oh, this could work. I wonder how it's going to work this time. This is going to be really good. Pattern recognition is a normal part of being a human being and is a part of our lives that is primarily run in our hearts. But can you see how much power that gives your heart over the way that you live your life? If your heart is the center of how you determine how to react today based on all of your past history, your heart is a very powerful piece of who you are. But it does far more than just give you those feelings, excitement or anxiety, fear or confusion or whatever. It also runs with this idea of pattern recognition, your desires. What I want is, for the most part, a result of pattern recognition. What I don't want is a result of pattern recognition. I want to be around people or I don't. I want to eat certain types of food or I don't. I want whatever, all based on past experiences. They are reactions. What I feel is a result of pattern recognition. Here's, again, some examples. What is the inherent reaction people should have to a football game? Should everybody be excited about a football game? No, of course not. Should everybody be bored by a football game? No, of course not. Why? Because our reaction is not a result to the football game. It is a result to past memories regarding football games. It is a result of past thoughts about football games. It is a result of past experiences regarding football games or whatever. We have this sort of box in our head about football games, and anytime football comes up, our brain pops that open and reacts accordingly. So I will be profoundly bored at the thought of watching a football game. Just a true fact. I'm sorry. I'm working on it. By the way, that is another thing about your heart. You can change your heart. You can transform your heart. You can control your heart. We'll talk about that in a moment here. But can we just turn those off, please? Because I can see it from behind me. So if we can kill it, that's great. Because now it's just blue glaring on all of you. For those of you who are watching but not here tonight, the screens are acting up, and so I can see this funny blue glare on everybody. But the reaction is not to the thing itself, but to our interpretation, memory of the reaction of the thing itself. Same is true of a party. If two people go to the exact same party, they might have two completely different reactions. Why? Based on past experiences with large groups of people. So, what is the heart? It is the thing that tells you how to react based on your past. It is your pattern recognizer. What pattern does the current moment require us to react according to? So, with that in mind, what is the condition of my heart? If it is true that my heart has such a profound role in my life, I need to ask myself, do I have a well-working, healthy, and functioning heart? Because a broken heart, I don't mean that in the, like, sad way, but a heart that is not properly functioning could severely lead me astray if it recognizes the wrong patterns in the wrong moments. Right? Like, that could be awful. And interestingly enough, this in Jeremiah 17:9 says this about the human heart. The human heart is the most deceitful of all things and desperately wicked. Who really knows how bad it is? In other words, the heart is so bad, none of us can really get to the bottom of how bad it is. And just to be clear, it doesn't say everybody else's heart. Right? Like, this isn't just your kids or just your spouse or just your friend or those people at work or those people at school or those people who live in your apartment building or whatever. The human heart, the fundamental nature. Raise your hand real quick if you're human. Yes, it's talking about your heart. The fundamental nature of your heart is that it is deceitful and wicked. Isn't that scary? Deceitful is a fascinating word. It means that part of my sin nature, part of what it means to be human, is to intentionally train myself to filter out things I don't want to know about me. It means that it is natural for me to have worked my whole life to intentionally have blind spots about my weaknesses and brokenness and sin. So not only am I sinful, but I've worked hard to ignore it, and now I've gotten good at it. You can see this with kids all the time. Did you hit your brother? Well, no. You should have seen what she did. Hold on. What does what she did, or he did, have to do with whether or not you hit your brother? I don't understand. I'm sorry, I didn't ask any questions about what he did. Did you, the person with your two arms, I had this conversation with both of my kids actually last week about the same incident. I don't care. I don't care what they did. That wasn't the question I asked. Did you hold up your two hands? Yep. Did those two hands? And what's amazing to me as I had this conversation is that both of my kids, because of what somebody else had done, both kids were completely convinced they had not, in fact, done any hitting. It wasn't hitting, it was slapping. Don't laugh if you've ever said, no, I'm not angry, I'm just frustrated. Can you think of any ways you've ever covered a lie that way? I'm not lying, it was just I was just making them feel better. Whatever, like, we do this, don't we? We have trained ourselves to ignore our own sinfulness. The other thing I think is fascinating is this other word, wickedness. Wicked is a scary, scary word. It means that there is something at my core that wants to make me God, wants to make sure that I get to call the shots, not God calling the shots. That's what wicked means. It's something setting itself up to do God's job. And if you've ever heard me talk about what it means to follow Jesus, one of the things I find myself often saying is that as followers of Jesus, we will in fact come to moments where we disagree with God about what we should do. We'll be honest, that does in fact happen fairly frequently, where my heart, my feelings, my desires, my heart, this is why I say that, because it's my heart. My heart will disagree. Why? Because the pattern recognition software that I have to use that tells me how I should respond today is completely broken. And so, I often want to do the wrong thing. That is why I desperately need Jesus to lead my life. Because if I do everything based on the pattern recognition in my life, based on how I interpret past events, I am going to make a mess. But thank you, Jesus, I have another way. So, the Bible tells us that the condition of our heart is that it is deceitful and wicked. And so, the Bible gives us this one command. It is this. Proverbs 4:23, it says, guard your heart above all else, for it determines the course of your life. We've talked a lot about the second half of that verse tonight, haven't we? Why does your heart determine the course of your life? Because it helps you decide today what you're going to do based on what happened yesterday. It is the one piece of you that is giving you immediate reactions to everything in your life. Guard your heart above all else. The one thing I am super grateful for is that we can reprogram our hearts. The heart is programmable. Sometimes that means we have to take some time to unpack all of the past patterns. Is why we so often recommend like things like counseling, because there are past patterns that are informing how we react today, And we can't overwrite those patterns until we come to terms with why they're there in the first place. Really important work. But then I can start retraining my heart by gathering new patterns starting right now. And one thing I love about the Bible is that it is super practical. Because when I read that verse, I've heard that verse, Proverbs 4:23. I've heard that verse maybe 150,000 times in my following Jesus journey. Like, I have heard that verse so many times. I've heard songs written about that verse. I've heard that verse quoted. I've heard that verse repeated. You know what I've never heard? The verses that come right after that verse. Literally until today, I thought to myself as I was preparing, I was like, man, so how do you do that? How do you guard your heart? Isn't that an important? Clearly, if everything else we're saying today is true, maybe one of the most important life questions I could have is, great, if I'm supposed to guard my heart, how do I do it? Fascinatingly enough, the next verse tells you in very clear terms. So Proverbs 4:24-27, it says this: avoid all perverse talk. Stay away from corrupt speech. Look straight ahead. Fix your eyes on what lies before you. Mark out a straight path for your feet. Stay on the safe path. Don't get sidetracked. Keep your feet from following evil. That is very concrete, very clear, very wise advice on how to guard your heart. So what does that mean? Let's just break that down real simple in the last 3-4 minutes we've got together tonight. First of all, control what you listen to. This is not talking about perverse talk, like that is to say, you shouldn't talk perversely. That's not, there are lots of places in the Bible that say that. You should, in fact, not talk perversely, but that is not what we're talking about here. What we're talking about here is if you are in a situation where somebody is talking in a way they should not be talking, you should stick your fingers in your ears until you get out of the room. That is, it literally commands you to avoid it. And it's not just perverse talk, it's corrupt. Stay away from corrupt speech. You know what corrupt speech is? Corrupt speech is not completely wrong speech. There's a difference. Something that is corrupt has some truth in it, but it also has some incorrectness mixed in. Something that's completely wrong is not that dangerous. Why? Because it's really obvious. If I say to you that I have a green shirt on today, you're probably, unless you're colorblind, not going to believe me. But if I say to you, I have a shirt on that's only red, if you're far enough away, you might believe me. Because you might not see the details, the little white stripey things. It's a whole lot easier to believe a partial truth than a complete lie. So I want to challenge you to avoid corrupt conversations. So avoid, let's get this really simple, uninformed talk. Avoid uninformed talk. If you don't know what you're talking about, first of all, shut up. Second of all, if you want more information, make sure you go to the right source. And if a group of people are talking about, here's a very simple rule, you've all heard me say this before, but if you are talking with anyone other than yourself, so if there are two or more people in the conversation, whether it is by text or in person or over the phone or whatever, if you are conversing with more than one other person and you are talking about a person who is not in the conversation, what you are doing qualifies as uninformed talk 100% of the time with no questions. Because what you are doing is not talking to the informed person. If you have questions, concerns, thoughts, or ideas about a person who's not in your conversation, then somebody needs to go talk to that person, and you people need to stop talking. That's corrupt talk, because you don't have access to all the information. That's the other half of this. It's not just uninformed talk, it's irrelevant talk. We spend a lot of time talking about things that are irrelevant to our lives. And when we are talking about irrelevant things, it is very easy to go quickly into corrupt talk. Again, I don't mean corrupt like evil talk. I don't mean you're trash-talking somebody. It's just a mixture of fact and non-fact, healthy and unhealthy. It's easy to, because we never jump off the track of healthy talk. we kind of veer just a little bit at a time, right? Like little tiny veering. Uninformed or irrelevant talk. If we stopped all the uninformed and irrelevant talk in our lives, I suspect we would talk about half the amount we talk now. And we would sin about half the amount we sin now. That's what I think. Actually, Jesus thinks that. I didn't write the verse down, but he does think that. I need to get that for next week if I said that. All right. Number two, so you control what you listen to. Number two, you control what you focus on. Guys, you want to control your heart, you need to pick a purpose for your life. And then you need to go after it. You will not know what is corrupt unless you know what is not corrupt. And part of the what is not corrupt is living a purpose-filled life. You know what your purpose is? You'll say no to all sorts of things. You'll avoid wasting time in all sorts of ways. You'll reject all sorts of things you would have never known to reject, except that you have a purpose for your life. Control what you focus on, and finally, control your feet. Everybody wants to prove themselves by walking into complicated situations and willpowering through them. That is never the way of Jesus Christ, nor is that the way of God. The way of God is to see a complicated, inappropriate situation and walk around it. Like lots of left turns is great. You don't need to power through. That's never the thing. Avoiding, I love this, don't get sidetracked. With that in mind, what is the condition of my heart? If it is true that my heart has such a profound role in my life, I need to ask myself, do I have a well-working, healthy, and functioning heart? Because a broken heart, I don't mean that in the, like, sad way, but a heart that is not properly functioning could severely lead me astray if it recognizes the wrong patterns in the wrong moments. Right? Like that could be awful. And interestingly enough, this in Jeremiah 17:9 says this about the human